This is The Guardian.
Today, have open marriages gone mainstream?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Molly Roden-Winter was on her way to Texas for a work trip when she received a text that made her panic. It was from her 13-year-old son, Daniel.
Mom, 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 call me. Mom, what's going on? Mom, are you in an open marriage? And I was like, oh, Lord.
It was a question she had been dreading for 7 years, ever since she and her husband, Stuart, decided to open up their marriage and start having sex with other people.
And so I called my husband first. I assumed that it was something he had done sloppily, which it was. He had left his dating profile up on the laptop and my son had seen it. And it was really a nerve-wracking moment for me. I did not want to ever have that conversation with my child.
Now the cat was out of the bag. Daniel had seen his dad's profile on OkCupid. She rang her son and tried to reassure him that they weren't breaking up, that they were happy together, and that they told each other everything. Of course, Daniel immediately had some questions.
My favorite question he asked was, when? How on earth do you have time to do that? Because in his mind, I was always around, and I was trying to always be around.
Before too long, Molly and Stuart's younger son also found out their secret, and he had even more questions.
My younger son was very concerned that I was maybe having relationships with people he knew, you know, like our neighbors. Anytime he saw anybody on the street give me a glance, he would say, wait, you're not sleeping with him, right? And we had to have a real conversation about open marriage does not mean this is a free-for-all.
Now, Molly has written a tell-all memoir about what happened when she opened up her marriage. It's called More. And it sparked a conversation about families and ethical non-monogamy. In some ways, this is nothing new, especially in LGBTQ+ communities. But until very recently, it was very much taboo for straight couples to admit that they slept with other people. Now, slowly, that's beginning to change. From The Guardian, I'm Helen Pidd. Today in Focus, the truth about open marriages. Molly, I've read your book. It's pretty unflinching stuff. Why did you decide to go public and write a book about something so deeply personal?
I wrote the book for a couple reasons. Largely, it was because I didn't see anything in the conversation around open marriage and polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, all the different things that you might hear it called. I didn't see anything that was reflecting my experience, particularly as a mother. I was seeing stories that were, you know, maybe very young people, and certainly more commonly among queer people in the queer community. There's been a long history of non-monogamy as being kind of an accepted framework for relationships. And I wasn't seeing anything in my kind of heteronormative world. And I felt like I had really learned some things about myself in a way that was surprising to me. And I wanted to tell as truthfully as I could all of the difficult parts and also all the ways in which I as an individual and my marriage grew as a result of this lifestyle.
And can you paint a picture for us? Tell us about your life and your marriage before you took what to many people would be a fairly radical step of opening up the marriage.
I mean, we had a very typical marriage and a good one. I was really happy with him, happy with our with our sex life, happy with everything except how much he worked. But I think that's also a real typical thing when you've got young kids. That's a real common argument point. And so it was when my kids were 3 and 6, and I was just, I had had it. I was at the end of my rope after another day of being with them all day. And my husband had said he would be home for the kids' bedtime, and he wasn't. And so when he walked in the house, I just stormed out without even remembering my phone and my wallet. I got dragged to a bar by a friend I met on the street and met somebody that started flirting with me, and it was exhilarating. I felt like a full human being for the first time probably since, you know, I had been pregnant with my first, and I was only 35, you know. I didn't feel washed up, but I felt washed up, if you know what I mean. It was kind of this reminder to me that there was a part of myself that wasn't getting fed by motherhood and by marriage, to be frank. What I did not realize was that it would open a door inside of myself that would lead other places, and that it was going to get a lot more interesting than I thought it was.
And until that night, had you ever considered anything other than a monogamous marriage?
I had not. I mean, we got married when I was 5 years, I continue to be 5 years younger than my husband. He had quite a bit more dating experience, shall we say, and sexual experience than I. And before we even got married, he told me, you know, if you ever want to sleep with someone else, you just let me know. You know, I don't want you to lie to me. And it kind of turns me on, which, you know, is not the way a lot of people feel, but it's more common than you'd think. But I never thought I would.
How did your husband react when you came home and told him?
Yeah, he was immediately titillated by it and thought I should go for it. But even with his permission, it felt so dangerous to me. I was afraid that if I veered too far away from my husband, that we would grow apart and that I would blow up my marriage. And I think that's a legitimate fear.
Mm. And you and Stuart set some ground rules for your open marriage. Can you tell us about them?
Well, when we really decided to do it in earnest, my main rule was no falling in love. I did not want either of us to fall in love. It felt very dangerous to me. And all the other rules were pretty much designed to prevent the falling in love. So things like no sleepovers, no dating the same person twice in 1 week, nobody in the neighborhood, things like that, was all so that we could restrict the intimacy.
So did you want it to be a sexual thing rather than an emotional thing?
That was what I thought I wanted. As it turned out, that became very unfulfilling for me. You know, the transformation I wanted to document in the book was going from just doing this as a sexual adventure to really defining myself and identifying as polyamorous.
So Andrew G. Marshall, you are a marital therapist with 35 years experience helping couples through all of life's problems. Can you just spell it out for us? What exactly is an open marriage, and how does an open marriage differ from polyamory or swinging, wife swapping, other terms that we might have heard?
Well, I think the thing to say about all of this is we're the generation that has a great advantage. And the great advantage is that we can arrange our relationships any way we wish to. The sort of old rules have been thrown away and we're starting from fresh. So I think there are sort of three main terms to be thinking about. An open marriage is that you're no longer going to be monogamous, but that could mean a huge number of things. It could mean threesomes, where you're both there with, you know, maybe one person watching or maybe both of you participating. But it also can mean separate dates. And that's a huge amount of opportunities within what is broadly called an open relationship. Then you have polyamory, which generally means some kind of ongoing relationship. With polyamory, there is the suggestion that you're going to have a deeper connection. There might be love, it might be on an ongoing basis, And then there's a third category, which is called relationship anarchy. And the idea with that is you are a free person. You sort of decide what you want to do. You know, you're going to be considerate of your partner, but, you know, effectively there are no rules.
And are open marriages or other forms of non-monogamy something that you think are getting more mainstream and perhaps a bit less taboo?
Certainly in my practice, I work in Berlin, and it's a topic that people talk about through all ages. When I was in London practicing there about 5 or 6 years ago, I didn't have any of this. So I think it's something that's coming through, but a conversation like this would have been salacious 5, 6 years ago. Now it's a respectable, serious conversation rather than something we're sort of laughing at these crazy people behind our hands.
And I guess some people might worry that if their partner broaches the subject and they're not immediately into it, that they're somehow prudish or old-fashioned. What would you say to that if that's somebody's reaction to the idea?
I would say all of your emotions are acceptable, and find out what is the feeling trying to tell me. You know, there's probably fear there. So let's hear that. There's probably anxiety. There might be some old trauma. In the same way, it's really important to listen to our desires, because they tell us things, you know, that it might not be just as simple as I want to have sex with other women. It might be something actually much deeper that's going to come up.
So all emotions are valid?
Yeah, rather than saying, you know, these emotions are acceptable because, you know, they're hot, and these ones are not acceptable because they're cold. They're all necessary. We need to hear all of them. We need to give them space to be heard.
And it sounds like having a deal in the first place and ground rules is really important to making non-monogamy work. Can you tell us perhaps some of the do's and don'ts about having a successful open relationship?
Right. Well, the two things you really want to avoid is, first and foremost, if you've got somebody lined up already to have this relationship with, this extra relationship, that's going to be a recipe for disaster.
So you fancy somebody, basically. You've got your eye on somebody and you think, right, this is the time to have the conversation. You're saying it is not the time to have the conversation.
Exactly. You've most probably wanted to have the conversation for 2 years beforehand, and you should have had the conversation 2 years earlier. The other thing that can happen is the person who's thinking about the non-monogamy has spent so long debating it with themselves, they've sort of come up with the answer, which is an open relationship, which is a huge shock for their partner. So they're presenting a conclusion, and the partner hasn't even entered the debating arena. So really, if you're going to have this kind of discussion, I would be setting aside sort of 6 months to have it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you need to have time to get your head around it. You need to have time to ask questions. This is a huge life-changing thing. You know, 6 months is perhaps a little bit quick. Let's have 18 months for it. You need to be able to talk to each other, and you need to be able to hear each other, and you need to be able to deal with each other's distress without trying to close down the topic. I mean, you know, this is, you know, Olympic grade material. Right. We're not talking, you know, we're not talking the egg and spoon race. We're talking the Olympics.
Molly, it struck me reading the book that the path towards you actually enjoying your open marriage was far from smooth, and it certainly had a bit of a rocky start. And I must admit, there were certain encounters in the book that I found really quite difficult to read. I'm thinking here of the man who keeps forgetting to wear a condom. On the other hand, your husband, Stuart, he seems to be having a fine old time. Did you ever ask him why he seemed to be finding it so much easier?
Yeah. He said, "Molly, the reason is I date women and you date men. And it's so much easier to date women, and women are better." You know, I mean, so he was making a joke, but it's also like, I mean, it kind of speaks to, in some ways, just the all of the inequity that happens in a heterosexual relationship. It's interesting because, yes, I have met some wonderful men since, but I think I was having trouble articulating what I wanted. I was having trouble finding men who didn't think this was just kind of like, ooh, this is someone who I can just have sex with, but I don't need to take emotional care of at all.
And you sought help, didn't you, to work through these feelings?
Yeah. And it was work with my therapist, realizing I need to take care of myself first and foremost. I need to value myself. I can't just be looking for validation from men, which is what we teach girls to do, mm-hmm. at least historically. So there was a lot of patriarchal mindset that I had to work through in order to choose better partners that Stuart never had to work through.
I thought it was really interesting in the book how you grapple with the idea that opening up your marriage might make you a bad mother.
Yes, yes. I felt like I wasn't allowed to have a self outside of motherhood. And we do this with women all the time. We compliment women by calling them a selfless mother. You know, I was just trying to be the best mother I could without paying any attention to my truest self that I had never really gotten to know. I mean, it's been a real evolution for me in terms of overcoming the shame that I felt about being a sexual person and a mom. And that's another reason why I wrote the book, because I feel like we don't really allow mothers to be sexual creatures. You know, once you've conceived that child or your children, you're supposed to put away your sexuality and bury it, especially as you start entering middle age. And I feel like it's important as women that we give ourselves permission to change and evolve and grow as we get older. So I feel now like it has made me a much better mother. I know that I have really great open communication with my sons now. I don't think that would have happened if I had just stayed buttoned up in service of some ideal mothering that I think actually doesn't serve anyone.
And speaking of motherhood, one of the revelations you discuss in the book is how you discovered that your parents were also in an open marriage. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I did not know this as a kid. And in fact, you know, my parents were both teachers in the Midwest, very puritanical is a good way to say it. And so my mother and I did not talk about sex when I was growing up at all. I learned about my parents from my mother's older sister when I was 28 years old. And I made some comment about my mother being such a goody-goody or a prude or something. And my aunt said, oh, your mother's not such a goody-goody. She had an affair. She had had a couple of vodka tonics. And so I was shocked. And I confronted her. And I said, you know, your sister told me about the affair. Does dad know? And she told me, well, it was your father's idea. And she said, you know, because I just really hadn't had much experience before we got married. He thought it would be good for me. He thought it would be good for my self-confidence. And my dad said, I think you should go for it.
And how did hearing that affect how you felt about your burgeoning open marriage?
Yeah. One of the reasons I think I continued to sort of want to persist, even when open marriage was difficult, was that my parents had an open marriage for years, no longer because they're in their 80s now and she has Parkinson's and that's not part of their life anymore. But she was on the other side of it and was able to say to me that she was so glad she had had the experiences that she did. And she has these lovely friendships now with men that used to be her partners. And her relationship with my dad, she would tell me, was stronger as a result because they had to talk through so many difficult feelings. So I had that as like my aspiration. I was like, ah, oh, I want to get to that point.
Coming up, how to love more than one person without jealousy ruining everything.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Molly, tell me, how did you deal with jealousy?
Now that's the one. That's the big emotion that nobody wants to have to deal with. And so for me, when I scratched the surface of the jealousy, what I found underneath was a lot of insecurity and fear. Fear that I was going to lose my husband, that if he liked someone else or, God forbid, loved somebody else, it would mean that there was less love for me. And it would also say something about who I am, that I'm not enough or I'm not what he wants. But then we discovered, you know what? All I really need is for you to hear me say it and to reassure me and to say, oh, honey, why are you feeling jealous? What are you feeling insecure about? And to maybe make a plan for us to do something. And then it just started to disappear. So it's also, the more time that passes, there's really no substitute for time. After 24 years and 15 of those years being open, I no longer think, oh, he's going to find someone he loves more and he's going to run away. No, that's not happening. I am confident that is not happening. So it takes time, and it also takes some active working together to reassure whoever is experiencing jealousy that it's okay to feel jealous. It's normal. It's natural. It doesn't mean anybody did anything wrong, but it does mean you might need to spend an hour or two or three at the beginning working it through. And it's going to be hard. I can't sugarcoat it. I find jealousy hard. Not everybody does. People are wired a little differently, but I found it difficult.
Molly, I've got to ask, where on earth did you find the time and the energy to do this when you had small kids at home?
Yeah, I didn't sleep much. My youngest never slept. He was a terrible sleeper. And I was exhausted all the time. I felt, though, like if I'm going to be exhausted, let me at least have a little bit of fun. You know, I was like, I would much rather be exhausted from a sexual escapade than exhausted from making zucchini muffins from scratch for the school picnic. I was like, I started cutting corners in other areas that didn't feel as important suddenly. There are ways in which motherhood is an infinite job, and teaching is similar. I was a teacher as well. And I was realizing too, I was giving so much of myself. I needed to do something that was for me. And part of me wanted to do something bad, something transgressive. I didn't want to do all the things I was supposed to do. It was like this big act of rebellion, and I needed it.
And where are you at now with your marriage? You've had many ups and downs, quite a bit of trial and error over the years.
So at this point, both my husband and I have more than one relationship with people that we love and who love us. Currently, I have two partners outside of my marriage. One, it's been for 3.5 years, and one for 2 years. But I think I had to experience it in order to believe it was possible. It's very hard to believe it in the abstract. Loving someone else actually made me love my husband more, and he feels the same way.
So there isn't a finite amount of love.
Right. It doesn't feel that way at all. Instead, I feel like so much has opened up inside of myself that I just have lots of love to give. I think for a lot of people, monogamy is plenty roomy and they do not need that extra space, but I feel like I do. And we are closer than we've ever been. And I think it's partly because we're both really happy and have learned so much about ourselves and one another.
And do you think polyamory, open marriages are for everybody?
No, I do not. I think it's really difficult. I don't think marriage is for everybody. I don't think having children is for everybody. But I think part of it is not just settling into the default setting of monogamy without choosing it actively. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we run into trouble when we assume that what we've been told is the way, that we accept that without questioning it.
What do you think the reaction to your book tells us about non-monogamous relationships in 2024?
I think my book is part of this kind of zeitgeist moment where it is becoming more mainstream. Even a couple years ago when I was pitching the book, I was getting a lot of rejection saying, no, this is not, there is no audience for this. And so that was, you know, 2022. I think it's been kind of catapulted to the mainstream in part because I just kind of look and act like a regular mom. And that has gotten people's attention because it has been considered so fringe. But I've also gotten a lot of messages on my Instagram in particular from people saying, oh my goodness, thank you for telling this story. I live in Maine or Tennessee or Australia or wherever it is. And I don't feel like I can tell anybody that we have an open marriage. And my hope is that it will come a little more out of the shadows. And so people can see that this is, I would say, a better option than infidelity. You know, there's a lot of infidelity in our society and a lot of shame around it. And I think the impulse that is behind it is not something to be ashamed of, but I think it's a healthier way forward if you are feeling attraction for other people and you want to just talk about it and mm-hmm. explore it. You don't even have to act on it sometimes to talk about it. Just kind of taking your fantasies for a test drive with your partner can be really freeing. It's the shame that I think is problematic.
Molly, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Helen. I appreciate it.
That's all for today. You can read Michael Segalov's interview with Molly on theguardian.com, and her book, More, is available now. Thanks as well to Andrew G. Marshall. He has his own podcast called The Meaningful Life. Today's episode was produced by Eli Block and Alex Atak. It was presented by me, Helen Pidd. The executive producer was Homa Khalili, and the sound design was by Solomon King. That's all for today. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.